I'm Kara Lawrence, and Tuesdays this month on Let's Hear It, I'm joined by Western Michigan University music major John Boyd, a violist by training who also has a lively interest in the music and lives of composers of color through the ages. We started off last week with the highly dramatic, almost improbable life of Joseph Bologne, the 18th century Afro-French violin virtuoso and composer who vaulted to the top of French society, not entirely on his musical gifts, but on his prowess as a swordsman. This music was written by a composer of a much closer era, the late 19th, early 20th centuries. Here's John Boyd to tell us more.
Samuel Coleridge Taylor, not to be confused with Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the English poet who he's named after. He was born in 1875 in London. His father was from English-occupied Sierra Leone, and his mother is an Englishwoman, a white Englishwoman. His father and mother, they met at some point in London and, you know, got together. And actually, his father went back to Africa before he ever found out that she was pregnant, so he never got to know his father. He was raised by a single mother who lived with her family and her father and her brother. Her brother was an amateur musician. That's probably where that kind of influence took over on Samuel.
So he didn't start off with the privileged beginnings of last week's composer, Joseph Bologne.
Yeah, he is quite different.
Middle-class English.
Definitely middle-class English. You know, not much, nothing special really about their family other than the fact that she had this mixed child.
When did the music begin to show for him?
Actually, fairly early, very similar to Mozart. He started very early with his violin studies. And at the age of 15, he was accepted to the Royal College of Music. The director at the time was a little bit uneasy about letting him in. He thought that kind of, you know, since he was this kid of color, that the other kids really wouldn't accept him or that they would kind of, you know, make fun of him and things like that. But luckily, he said, you know, why not give it a shot? And he was accepted, and he did very well there, first as a violin student, and then he switched to composition, and he studied composition with Charles Stanford there about 3 years after he was there at the university, or at the College of Music, and that was his main composition teacher, and the one who really showed him how to get things started.
So what kind of music did he grow up listening to? What era are we talking about?
He grew up in the era of Elgar. So Elgar was pretty much the main composer of the time. And actually, at one point, Elgar complimented him, saying he was the most intelligent young man that he had come across. So speaking respectively to his music. But he was heavily influenced by Brahms. That's what, something that Stanford really tried to get him not to do, actually, was to not emulate Brahms in everything that he did. Brahms and Dvorak were definitely big influences in his music.
On everybody in that time period, too.
Definitely. And that became kind of his mission later in life, to bring to light, you know, this African-American music, just like Brahms had brought the Hungarian themes in music and Dvorak with the Czech music and things of such like that.
Right. Yeah. And we know that Dvorak, in his visit to America, had advice for American composers to find the native music, find the folk music of your place and start using it. And it sounds like Samuel Coleridge Taylor knew that advice as well.
Definitely. You hear that a lot in his African sketches and things like that. Hiawatha's Wedding, which is his most famous work, features a lot of those type of indigenous themes.
Well, tell me about this Hiawatha's Wedding. It was a significant work.
Work for orchestra and chorus, and it was quite the major work, definitely the most well-known. Unfortunately, not the greatest moneymaker for him. He unfortunately sold the rights to it for about £15 and never actually reaped any of the benefits from this great work.
Well, he's not alone in having signed over rights to a piece that became a huge hit, but I certainly feel sorry for the young Samuel for giving up the future royalties to his biggest piece.
Yeah, so he ended up basically teaching, and he taught at the Trinity College, and so he taught there, and giving composition lessons was pretty much his main form of making money. At the time.
Did he have a family life as an adult?
Yes, he did, actually. He married a fellow student from the Royal College of Music in 1899, and they had two children, a son, Hiawatha, and a daughter whose name was Avril, and she became actually quite a composer and conductor herself. She died in 1998, so a lot of her works still remain. I think she wrote her first piece at like 12, which is really interesting to have this great composer as a father, definitely.
So she was able to bring attention to the work of her father, which might have gone unnoticed as decades go by. We do lose the names and music of a lot of composers.
And this is one to not let slip by the wayside.
So what do you like about his music? I mean, as a string player yourself, or even just a fan?
Well, my favorite piece by him is the Ballade in A Minor for Orchestra. It's just the power you feel in this symphony. You can definitely feel his influence by Brahms and Dvorak. And once you listen to it, it really just kind of brings you in. And there's really great themes and originality. It's a really great piece. And I think I like that about him, how he brings you in and kind of takes you on this journey, you know, in 11 minutes or so. You're like, you've seen it all, you know?
So the word ballade, does that imply a story or a ballad without words?
You would think so, but this piece, it definitely catches you off guard in the beginning. You don't expect to hear what you hear. I'm not going to spoil it for the listeners because I know they get to hear it later, but you definitely get taken aback by the first couple of measures, and then it wraps you in with this great love theme and definitely tells a story of some sort.
John, when you are researching a composer like Samuel Coleridge Taylor, do you put yourself in his shoes and try to imagine that time period, the difficulties he faced, and what you might have done in his place?
Well, I try not to think what I would have done in his place, because that's, you know, what's done is done. But I do think a lot about the period and try to think a lot about what, you know, what might have been going on in his head at the time. You know, what was he thinking about when he wrote Hiawatha's Wedding Feast? What was he thinking about when he fell in love with his student here at the Royal College, you know, and trying to get her family to accept them and accept their love, you know, and which they never really did. But I try to get into kind of their mindset and see how they might have felt at different points in their lives. It's really interesting.
What do you think might be some of the high points of Samuel Taylor Coleridge's life?
He actually got to visit. He was invited by Theodore Roosevelt to come to the White House in 1904. So he made several trips to the United States and having visited the White House and such. And he met Paul Laurence Dunbar in London, and they ended up setting a few of his poems to music together, and they did a few joint recitals that were, they were done here in America, and they were, it was paid for by the government. When you look up Samuel Coleridge Taylor, you find a lot about the poems that he set to music. That was really his main thing, taking different poems and finding, you know, sort of how they would fit into musical context and then making it. So it's really interesting.
Us instrumentalists often grow to love a composer purely through their instrumental music and almost forget they have a songwriting side. So it's important to take a look at that when you're looking at Samuel Taylor or Taylor Coleridge.
Definitely. The evidence is overwhelming.
If people are interested in learning more about Samuel Taylor Coleridge, obviously the internet's the first place to go. Were there any resources online that you found helpful?
There's a website called Afroclassical, and it's all about African Americans in classical music, and it brings up a lot of good information from different biography sources as well as encyclopedia sources and things like that. So it takes you through the story of their life and then helps you with, you know, evidence and things like that about it. So I recommend that website as well. But other than that, you know, you find these great nooks and crannies on the internet, and you kind of have to do your double check your research and everything and make sure that everything lines up. But once it does, there's a lot out there.
There's also a lot of recordings of Samuel Taylor Coleridge's music. So in 1905, he's touring the United States, lots of recognition, yeah. And still teaching at a conservatory in Britain. How does the rest of his life turn out?
He taught at the Trinity College up until the end. He collapsed one day, and it turned out he had double pneumonia, and he ended up passing away a few days after he collapsed in 1912. Yes, at 37 years old, so very young.
Oh, yeah. And there's another reason to kind of connect him to Mozart, I
definitely,
suppose.
Definitely. Early age to start and early age to end.
So if you're going to go out and find music of Samuel Coleridge Taylor, you'll find a romantic English pastoral style with a lot of interest in the folk music of Africa and even America.
Also, a lot of art songs written with the poems of many, many famous poets.
Final thoughts on Samuel Coleridge Taylor?
Great composer, taken way too soon. Way too soon.
I wish we could run you into the studio and have you play some Samuel Coleridge Taylor for us, but that'll have to be another time.
Definitely.
John, thank you so much for coming in to talk about Samuel Coleridge Taylor.
Thank you for having me back. Hopefully someday I can play something for you guys.
We'll count on it. And who are we talking about next time?
Next time, we are actually exploring a rarity of sorts. Florence Price, who is a female African-American composer. So we'll be talking about her next week. It'll be quite the treat to talk about Florence next week.
John Boyd is a fourth-year student at Western Michigan University majoring in music. You can hear him every Tuesday night this month telling the story of a composer of color who excelled in classical music.